Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 9th day of January 2021. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and no doubt about it, this was probably not only one of the most consequential and even disastrous weeks in U.S. history, but perhaps the most. And unless we see dramatic events very soon, when it comes to the American Republic, arguably the last. We saw not only traitors in action, live on TV, from what was once called the United States Capitol, now arguably Deception Central. We saw Michael the Pence. And I'm going to use that terminology because if you remember the movie Braveheart, it was Robert the Bruce that betrayed not only William Wallace, but all of the people of Scotland that he was supposed to be eventually a king over. But when it comes to being a spineless traitor, if you watch the disgusting events of Wednesday play out, you realize there were at least 99 of them in the Senate that were almost as spineless. Et tu, Brute comes to mind. And a House of Representatives that certainly harkened back to Robert the Bruce's so-called nobles. Remember, folks, they were given lands and titles, and that was all it took. But perhaps even more disgusting was how a literally transparently pre-planned, utterly predictable false flag was so disgustingly pushed by the media. They brought in buses of Antifa people and were advertising in advance to dress up like they were MAGA people and pretend to be Trump supporters so they could do exactly what they ended up doing. Trouble is, one of the big ringleaders, wearing his Viking outfit, has been caught at all kinds of BLM and Antifa events before. Not that the mainstream media intends to point that out, or will allow anybody else to, as they begin to shut down sites to Facebook and Twitter. There was even one Antifa communist pictured literally inside the Capitol building with his hammer and sickle tattoo showing on his hand. As one guy pointed out, oh yeah, lots of MAGA people have hammer and sickle tattoos. Nothing to see here. Move along, move along. The coverage was so transparent and disgusting, it actually looked more like what the left-stream media thought deplorables must be than what they actually are. But hey, who's going to point that out? Twitter and two Facebook will shut you right down. I mentioned earlier in the week that it was obvious how this was going to go when I saw the early coverage. Literally only minutes after the Capitol lockdown, which oh so coincidentally managed to interrupt the Arizona electoral vote speeches, in this headline from the Daily Mail out of the UK. Female Trump supporter dies after being shot inside Capitol when Trump's mob stormed and looted Congress to stop Biden victory confirmation. You ready for this? The banner headline on top of that piece of yellow tripe says, Blood on Trump's Hands. Hey, isn't that great? We managed to instigate a riot, execute a woman who just happens to be a 14-year Air Force veteran, and blame it all on a president that might have otherwise managed to show the American people just how corrupt, evil, and crooked we really are. And we shut it all down, sealed it up, managed to do the dirtiest of the dirty deeds one more time in the wee hours of the morning when almost nobody was watching, and are now going to blame all of them for what we intend to do to them next. But actually, while this was a turning point, if you think this week was nasty, folks, just wait till you see what Führer Biden's handlers have planned for the first 100 days, or more like the last 100 days. They're already talking again about impeaching Trump or getting rid of him via the 25th Amendment or, hey, have we heard this before, by any means necessary. The Daily Mail Online was among many that had headlines like this just in the last couple of days. Trump's banana Republicans. It's not enough that they want to kill Trump. 8 GOP senators that they'd like to lynch and 139 House members, including Ted Cruz and Kevin McCarthy, are all branded the Treason Caucus. Yeah, Democrats can do this every time a Republican is elected, but don't you Republicans dare think that some animals aren't more equal than others, and you can get away with doing the very same thing we always do, and that's objecting to electors. No, they face calls for expulsion for objecting to the Biden victory, after, of course, the pre-planned and well-executed Capitol riot. I'll recap Wednesday's events in some detail in the next segment, but for now I think it's appropriate to go back and look at some things that happened before the climax of the Communist Revolution, and certainly telegraph what we can expect next. On Tuesday, for example, just before the big event, lawmakers in New York, says a piece from GunsInTheNews.com, have proposed, and this ought to be a real shocker, folks, one of the most tyrannical and utterly worrisome pieces of legislation we've ever seen. They want to ban citizens from being allowed to have body armor to protect themselves from bullets, in the gun-free killing zone state, no less. Since no one's ever been beaten to death with a bulletproof vest, the intentions of the bill are pretty darn obvious. They have no other purpose than making it easier for either the government or its criminal minions, and maybe I repeat myself, to kill citizens, and of course harder for citizens to protect themselves from being killed, especially by bullets. New York, which already has some of the strictest and most anti-constitutional gun laws in the country, and the crime statistics show it, now want to make it a misdemeanor and then a potential felony for the peons to either purchase or even possess a passive means of allowing their body to resist bullets. And unlike other attempts to ban body armor that we've seen in the past, this one doesn't even grandfather in people who already own it. In fact, the bill claims, Achtung, you will turn it over to the state for disposal, or perhaps to be worn by de Blasio or Cuomo, or you are guilty. Well, no, they get their own free ones, come to think of it. Anyway, after the passage of the bill, the citizen serfs will have 15 days to turn it in before Big Brother declares them to be criminals. This abomination is called Assembly Bill A-352, introduced by three real scumbags whom I won't name, and among other things, it claims that a person is guilty of the unlawful purchase or possession of a body vest when he or she knowingly or unlawfully, what a crock, possesses or purchases a body vest. Unless, of course, you are properly sanctioned by the almighty state. All the rest of you, we could give a you-know-what about, and you can just take one through the heart. First time around, it's a Class A misdemeanor, and afterwards a Class E felony. The felonies here being committed against a formerly free people. But wait, there's more. We follow that up with this one from Deborah Casson's Weiss at the ABA Journal, which tells us that a U.S. Department of Justice, lawyer, argued on Monday that the United States can, in fact, kill its own citizens with impunity and without judicial review, when litigation might reveal things you aren't allowed to know, you peons, you. They call them state secrets. And now, as we've come to figure out, that includes election rigging. But at least there was some pushback. The argument, says the piece, drew alarm among judges on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, according to Courthouse News Service. Judge Patricia Millett characterized the DOJ's argument as giving the government the ability to, quote, unilaterally decide to kill U.S. citizens, according to coverage of the argument by that service. Do you appreciate, she asked, just how extraordinary that proposition is? Well, wait a minute, folks. Not to worry. We know that Big Brother only wants to kill bad people. And that, of course, increasingly means you. Especially if you've begun to figure out who the really bad, and by the way, constitution-hating people, actually are. DOJ lawyer Bradley Hinshelwood acknowledged during the hearing that a strike against a U.S. citizen is a serious undertaking. Why, they might even feel really bad afterwards, but that's what double martinis are for. Saying that the courts have a role in deciding whether the state secrets privilege is appropriately applied and sufficient to kill somebody. But the lawyer on the other side arguing for the defendant, Tara Jordan Plochaki, argued that the FedGov was seeking to expand sovereignty allowed under the state secrets privilege, saying, quote, whether that's in a parking lot in the United States or abroad in Syria, the government has claimed for the first time ever in this case that it has unfettered and unreviewable discretion to kill U.S. citizens at will, unquote. And hey, folks, now you know why they don't want you to have body armor either. And yeah, folks, as if it wasn't obvious, we saw another demonstration on that score on Wednesday. Before Wednesday, though, there was another event that, in hindsight, doesn't look nearly as significant. Yeah, there was a runoff election in Georgia, and yeah, it was rigged just exactly like everybody expected it to be. Hey, there's an amazing shocker. But let's take a quick look back anyway, just to kind of set the stage for the bigger events. Kemp and Raffensperger were able to do it again, using Dominion voter machines for another election fraud, which, to no one's surprise, came out exactly as we would have expected. And, matter of fact, deja vu all over again, we've seen it before. You can probably guess what happened, although arguably it's not done yet. But here's a quick review of the headlines. Fulton County has blocked credentialed Republican poll monitors from overseeing absentee ballots and verifying signatures despite a court order. What else is new? Says Christina Lehler for the Gateway Pundit. The twin Georgia Senate runoff is going exactly the way we expected. They're going for the steal, that means the deep state, and the Communist Party puppets by any means necessary. Poll observers in Fulton County on Tuesday were being blocked by barriers, and single individuals were scanning and adjudicating ballots, sick, without Republican observers at the World Congress Center. The Fulton County Republican Party took the fight to court, got an order, for whatever that matters, from a Fulton County Superior Court judge, which was basically ignored. Couple of other quick headlines just to set the stage. It's happening again, said a later story. Total vote counts in the Georgia Senate race were reported at 79% counted. Oops, nope, sorry. 76% counted. Must have been a bunch of Republicans that needed adjudication. Maybe a bit of swapping. Good thing Raffensperger and his CCP buddies left those Dominion voting machines right where they count. Pun intended. And who could be surprised by this one? Breaking news at 10:17 p.m. last night. As the GOP pulled ahead in the Georgia Senate races, a Democrat county stopped counting votes for the night. Well, probably not, but we can guess what they were doing instead. Because there's certainly nothing new under the sun on that score either. Likewise, CNN and ABC News, sick, removed 5,000 Purdue votes on live TV during the broadcast. Purdue's vote tally went down from 2.13 million to 2.125 million. It's a miracle, said one tweet. And let's not even pretend we're surprised by this one. Gabriel Sterling, Raffensperger's scumbag right-hand puppet, the voting systems implementation manager for the Georgia Secretary of State's office, announced early Tuesday morning on Twitter that a programming error on security keys had resulted in backup emergency ballots. Got to get them printed up and haul right over there. Needed to be brought to Columbia County near Augusta for the runoff election. And would you believe they needed some, quote, newly programmed keys and cards, too?
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
And as of Wednesday morning, communist Ossoff has declared victory in the Georgia state runoff, despite some organizations saying it's still too close to call, while others are claiming that Democrat Raphael Warnock, or is it Warnock, defeated Senator Kelly Loeffler in the other runoff. Oh, and if you saw her complete whoring sell-off of a cave in the Senate on Wednesday, in hindsight, you do have to argue whether the election was really worth the effort or not. You've heard similar arguments before. With rhinos like that, gee, who needs another Mitt Romney? Let's change gears here, though, for just a minute next. Given all the hoopla about whether or not the communist revolution is completely a done deal, or Americans will finally rise up and realize they've got nothing left to lose but the chains that are still being forged. Oh, and let's not forget the masks that are still being mandated and will get worse, and the injections that are still being planned, and you have no idea what's in that shot or how they plan to stick it in you, much less what the long-term effects will really be, because, of course, there's been absolutely no long-term testing, and what's going on now are guinea pigs waiting to find out. Even the short-term effects, though, have so far been pretty nasty. Dr. Eric A. Neptune reports 40,000 adverse vaccine effects so far. There are any number of anecdotal reports of people getting the poke and then dropping over dead. A number from Europe and from the United States, Heidi Neckelman, the widow of Dr. Gregory Michael, said on Friday that her husband was vaccinated back on December 18th and died 16 days later. He was age 56 and prior to the jab had been in perfect health. But after he became a guinea pig, he, quote, started to experience unusual symptoms. And 3 days after his vaccination, small spots began to appear on Gregory Michael's feet and hands. So he went to the emergency room at Mount Sinai, was admitted, and shortly thereafter suffered a stroke and died. That makes quite a few now, but remember,
these aren't the droids you're looking for.
Don't expect to hear too much more about those because the press is rapidly eliminating any reporting on them. And, of course, there is a massive agenda at play here, not to mention billions upon billions of dollars. Which brings me briefly to this piece from Lance D. Johnson at Natural News about New York's Fuhrer, Andrew Cuomo, who has announced a new use-it-or-lose-it vaccination distribution plan. Get this, and no, we're not kidding. Clearly, we still have the carrot and stick here. If they can pay 10 grand plus for a COVID hospitalization, why not? Yeah, use it or lose it. the vaccination distribution plan in which hospitals will be fined $100,000 if they do not use up all the coronavirus vaccines they're given in 7 days. That's how bad they want them to stick it to you. And furthermore, if they don't meet the government's quota for shots in the arm, they can be disqualified for future distributions and be subject to, quote, more serious sanctions. Oh yeah, people will volunteer, all right, or else. Now, in the second segment today, I'm going to rerun verbatim exactly what I put up on the day after Thursday to give you kind of a recap of how that played out and what we knew at the time and how it's been spun since. But first, a bit more of the truth to set it up. This was a story that the Gateway Pundit thought needed to be told about what really happened at the Capitol on Wednesday. Your host agrees, and obviously the New York Times, WAPO, and other leftist so-called guardians of the Fourth Estate aren't about to allow it, if they have anything to say about it. And, of course, that means you won't. There was a small group, writes Ben Wetmore for TGP, that was on the front line during the storming of the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday after traitor, and I'm going to say it correctly, Michael the Pence, stabbed Trump and America in the back. They asked that their names not be used or identifying information because they're unsure whether the deep state, now openly NKVD-type authorities, will track them down and do to them what they intend to do to the president. They verified their stories with video and pictures of the event. I'll quote their comments, as the author is just simply Adam, Bill, Charles, and Doug. Most importantly, though, they begin by all relating that the crowd was completely nonviolent, and it was police that instigated the violence against the protesters before they even got on the Capitol grounds. Quote, "We were on the sidewalk first, up against some metal barricades and bleachers, waiting for President Trump to come speak at the Capitol at 1 p.m. Remember, he said he would walk down there, folks, with the crowd. Never managed to show up, and that, of course, ought to raise some eyebrows. 10 minutes, though, back to the quote, before thousands of people were on the street chanting, 'F you, Nancy,' and 'Stop the Steal' on a megaphone, people were getting upset because we had just found out that Vice President Mike Pence had gone back on a previous statement indicating he would question the certification of electors. Oh, and wasn't the timing of that interesting, too, given what happened thereafter? As the crowd found out that they'd been betrayed yet again by the GOP establishment, lied to by someone as cowardly as Michael the Pence, people's anger was visible, said Charles. They unrolled a massive banner of Vampire Nancy Pelosi, and it charged up the crowd. Said Bill, the streets were jam-packed, filled with everyday people, grandmas, children, families, lawyers, doctors, people from all walks of life. This was an American crowd." Unquote. And as Charles added, "These families moved to the interior barricades, and it wasn't aggressive, it was just peaceful. This is where the cops came in and used overwhelming force. We were on the line with the barricade, and out came the metal batons, and they started hitting Trump protesters as hard as they possibly could. They were hitting old men and old women, people who for some reason brought their families to the event. I couldn't believe that there were young kids walking in this crowd, but the police were targeting the kids and hitting them with a baton across the head. It was vicious," said Charles. Said Bill, "There were regular police up until this point. This action by police, though, brought the crowd to a fever pitch where they were demanding that they be treated respectfully, but instead the police either began pepper spraying or tear gassing the crowd. Then they fought their way through 4 layers of barricades. As they were finally storming the Capitol, quote, there was one guy who climbed up a tower and could oversee the entire battle. He knew exactly what to say. He was steering people into the Capitol. It was straight out of the movie Enemy at the Gates when the Soviet commissars were shouting at people to move ahead. This guy was super old, clearly a combat vet. I can still hear him. 'If you don't move forward,' he said, 'Biden moves in.' The guy was a real pro. He was shouting things like, 'Close the gaps,' and that turning back was turning our backs on Trump. He said if we didn't move forward, Pence was going to give us Biden communism. He was 50 feet in the air and commanding the whole scene, telling people to pass bottled water ahead and other resources," said Charles. Quote, "We could tell that the 200 riot police were being very careful to stay behind the barricades, so we thought that denying that to them would cause them to be less vicious. There were metal connectors that we grabbed and then threw back at them like javelins. That then caused the barricades to come loose, and by then people were so angry that they started beating up the cops for attacking the kids and the grandmothers. There was one very obese cop in particular. He was shooting people on purpose in the eyes with pepper pellet packs that were causing horrible injuries. injuries. I saw one older woman bleeding profusely. It looked like her eye come out of the socket. We were coming for that asshole when we tore down the barricades, and later, when they saw it turned into a fair fight, they fled, said Bill. They tried to gas us. I've experienced tear gas before, said Bill, and this wasn't normal. It smelled different. Its color was different in the air, and it stung a lot more. You couldn't breathe. But what was happening was that it was just windy enough where it was kind of hitting the frontline guys hard, but then dissipating through the crowd and not having the intended effect. That was when, according to the small group, protesters started disassembling the metal barricades that protected the police. The pandemonium of the police running away from the crowd and being attacked by some revealed that a larger force was flanking them on one side, expecting to come in and trap the large group of angry protesters whipped up by police brutality. Just then, though, they were hit by repeated concussion grenades or flashbangs of some type that stunned them all. Quote, it was coordinated on all sides. The cops were hitting us with 6 cans of tear gas at once and multiple grenades. They were shooting at the same time. It felt like a shooting gallery, and they were the aggressors. They were shooting into the crowd several rows back, really for no reason, said Charles. After the barricades came down and one of the last grenades exploded, quote, it caused me to kind of reset and wake up, and my ears are ringing, and then in the sunlight you see the Capitol right in front of you, and you realize what has to happen next, says Adam. The police were moving forward and advancing and about to take control of the protesters. So, said Doug, we see this happening, and we realize what's about to happen. These vicious cops are about to hurt all these people and then likely arrest us all, and there's no way to retreat without being trampled. So I turned to the guys around me and yelled out, Mama didn't raise no bitch. So we threw the barricades aside and rushed the Capitol. We had them on the run, and we knew they couldn't stop us. We used the scaffolding from Biden's inauguration platform to get into the complex, said Doug. Adam added, they put us in this situation where we had no options. We couldn't go back against the crowd. We were being pushed into these cops, and the cops were cracking skulls with metal batons for no reason. Then we could see that they were about to make things even worse. They made this situation and gave us no other options. The scene, they said, took on a life of its own after that. Where battles with the vicious Capitol Police and other police forces outside continued as many rushed into the Capitol, others, who were curiosity seekers, entered the Capitol. When asked how many people got to the higher levels of the Capitol, Bill explained, oh, that was hilarious. Someone noticed the crane for Biden's inauguration stand and took control over it. It became the magic lift for getting people up into the building. It was like Bob the Builder and his magic lift for sieging the illegal Pence certification. There was something that told me that actually entering the building was too far, so I stayed outside. But it was tempting. The police were still trying to hurt our people, and there was this surreal moment when a large number of grandmas came up and sat down on the Capitol steps. They were blocking the entrance for many protesters, but they were tired and didn't have anywhere else to sit. I felt like they thought Mike Pence was going to come out and give them ice cream, juice boxes, and a personal tour. They had no idea what they were in the middle of, and none of us really did. No one was a professional protester there. Well, they're wrong on this score, folks. Oh, yeah. The professional Antifa protesters and FBI informants were already inside the building at that point, doing what we already know they did. Anyway, back to the quote here. No one was a professional protester here. They were just forced by necessity to move forward or get cracked in the head by a baton, said Adam. One of the victorious women in these clashes with the cops was a 70-ish-year-old gray-haired woman who was fighting with the cops, and when they ran away, they left one of their helmets behind, said Charles. People were getting serious injuries, and we were still winning. We aren't tired of winning. So this grandma had her victory, and she took that helmet like it was her enemy's skull, and she walked away over to the podium where Biden was going to give his inauguration, and she held it up and gave a roar, unquote. Folks, this is a story you're not about to hear from any of the waste stream ministries of propaganda. Well, they'll say ministries of truth, with, of course, their fact checkers who can be counted on for just one thing, and that obviously is to lie. It sounds like, if we hear the rest of the story, yeah, there was a mixture of people there in the Capitol, infiltrators, according to any number of independent reports, nasty, evil, agent provocateurs, and lots of Americans who were caught up and literally pushed by violence and pre-planning into doing what the media has since made a circus out of. But if you recall that quote from General Yamamoto just after the attack on Pearl Harbor, it may still apply. Quote, I fear all we have done is to awaken a sleeping giant and fill him with a terrible resolve. May it be so. Because if that's not true, anybody that's read history knows this only ends one way. Welcome back. On this Thursday, the 7th day of January, 2021, where the death of the Republic has now been officially commemorated on national TV for all formerly free Americans to watch, even if they're being lied to about most of the particulars. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and let's talk about what happened yesterday. And no doubt most appropriately, in the only act he'll probably be remembered for, soon to be former Vice President Mike Pence signed the death warrant shortly after 3:40 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. When better, folks, than like many aspects of this takeover in the wee hours of the morning when very few people were watching. And it seems to have played out, folks, exactly as it was intended to. With a distraction, a fake, a false flag, a blame shift, you knew that was coming, and then a cave on every front. They're celebrating in Beijing, the left coast, which is their port of entry, and of course the swamp. And Americans who understand exactly what was going on, what was intended to go on, and certainly what's coming, are still preparing. Time draws ever shorter. And since there was so much chaos, and yes, peaceful protest, and a whole lot of lying, obfuscation, smoke, tear gas, and you name it yesterday, let me start off trying to recap what happened this way. Imagine if the only major press coverage coming out of the American Revolution was from the British. You'd have certainly heard about the act of terror at Boston Harbor, albeit with the spin we're getting used to today, and the shots fired at Concord Green would have been justified as a Joe Biden-style gun confiscation raid against those evil, violent thugs, and I'm quoting the press, who tried to sack the Capitol. Oh, I'm sorry, the Temple of Democracy, and I can't tell you how many times I heard that coming from the self-righteous Constitution haters on the floor of the House as the Bolsheviks consolidated their power. It's an old but time-tested saying that truth is the first casualty of war. No doubt about it, folks. We've been at war, now it's obvious, and truth has long been the first casualty. Yesterday, the deep state upped the ante. You could even say it went into warp drive. So when you're dealing with a well-planned false flag like we saw yesterday, and the time to look carefully is now, because as George Orwell pointed out, the ministries of truth are busily rewriting it and expunging the evidence even as we speak, it's very important to realize that there has been and will be as much disinformation out there as truth. For example, say that Gulag, Two Facebook, and Twitter were the ones that were controlling all the information in 1775. Can you guess what you would have heard? Yeah, you can see it today. Yeah, the most honest election in human history. The sainted super genius and hero of the people, Joe Biden, won in a landslide. And the evil orange man has been inciting the riots we saw come to culmination yesterday ever since. because those people, who are of course all racist rioters, hate our democracy and therefore must be disarmed. And real soon, like within the next 100 days, they're already being muzzled, like the President of the United States was yesterday afternoon, and that of course is going to accelerate too, because we can't have them saying things that the almighty state doesn't want you to hear. And it may be that before this is over, Americans have to go back to small printing presses and local operations in order to get any semblance of the truth out as well. Remember that Paul Revere couldn't text or IM his co-conspiracy theorists either. You've no doubt heard about the breach of the Capitol. You've heard about the shooting. Whether any of us have heard the complete truth about that remains to be seen. You've certainly heard about Michael the Pence certifying the Fuhrer Elect's victory in the Electoral College. And you probably can't have missed the press's chortling over the former president, and they've already started deep-sixing him, saying that there will be an orderly transition on January 20th. And here, folks, I'll do something I almost never do, and that's make a prediction, because this one's easy. One way or the other, there'll be literal hell to pay after that. So let's go next to the Trump statement, actually not issued through his Twitter account, because he's been suspended from Twitter to Facebook and Instagram. Who could have imagined such a thing? And at least allegedly, the statement responding to the so-called electoral certification was through White House Deputy Chief of Staff Dan Scavino's Twitter. Did he really write it? Well, your guess is as good as mine, but I guarantee you we're going to be hearing worse lies. Statement by President Donald J. Trump. Quote, even though I totally disagree with the outcome of the election and the facts bear me out, nevertheless, there will be an orderly transition on January 20th. I've always said we would continue our fight to ensure that only legal votes were counted. While this represents the end of the greatest first term in presidential history, it's only the beginning of our fight to make America great again. Unquote. And if by that, folks, he means it's going to take a second American Revolution to get back what we once had, given that the Communist Revolution seems to have been completed yesterday, at least that part is on the right track. And by the way, as any number of people have noted, he certainly didn't concede. Although it's harder to argue that we haven't seen either another Trump cave or a successful palace coup. And with that in mind, let's turn first to this interesting and really bizarre set of statements before we go back and fill in some of the gaps. Not too long after what, for now at least, I'm going to call the breach and the subsequent media circus, somebody, and it's supposed to be the president, but it doesn't seem to have been, called in the National Guard to take care of the MAGA patriots. No, I don't trust him at all, but here's what the UK's Daily Mail said in a headline about Mike Pence calling in the National Guard. U.S. Capitol Police were unable to restore order, and it wasn't until late Wednesday afternoon that it was announced that National Guard forces would be positioned at the Capitol. In an odd statement, they admit, acting Pentagon Chief Christopher Miller, installed by Trump after he pushed out, and I'll put this word in here, traitor and Defense Secretary Mark Esper after the election, said he had spoken to Pence and not Trump about calling in the Guard. Quote, Chairman Milley and I, and there's another really disgusting name, just spoke separately with the Vice President and with Speaker Pelosi, Leader McConnell, Senator Schumer, and Representative Steny Hoyer. You notice a consistent pattern in that list of names, folks? About the situation at the U.S. Capitol, said Milley in a statement, referencing the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and Congressional Leaders, SICK. We have fully activated the D.C. National Guard to assist federal and local law enforcement as they work peacefully, I'll just have to say SICK after that, address the situation. We're prepared to provide additional support as necessary and appropriate as requested by local authorities. And I'll skip the rest of this bit of tripe. But at least the Daily Mail even admits this. It's not immediately clear why the Pentagon boss would speak to Pence rather than Trump, the actual commander-in-chief, about the decision to activate the Guard. Well, folks, maybe there is a reason, and maybe it'll eventually be as obvious as it is now to some of us. From there, let's go back to the morning and start filling in the gaps on one of the most consequential days in American history. I, like no doubt many of you, watched Trump's speech live to the huge crowd gathered outside the White House. To say it was disappointing, we'd heard it all before. It was a standard stump speech reiterating most of the complaints that, at least unless you listen to the mainstream news, you've heard over and over again about election fraud. All right, we know that. What's new? Where do we go from here? Was the standard refrain that I couldn't help but wonder. And so, evidently, were most in the crowd. Since then, I've heard comments reiterated from people that were there. Hey, yeah, why do you think we drove all the way across the country to be here? What else is new? What do we do today to fix what's clearly broken? And everybody watching heard Trump promise, we're all going to walk from here over to the Capitol. And I'll see you there. Only he didn't, or wasn't allowed to. And I guess I have to say it here, folks. If you've read 1984, you know that pretty soon we can expect a videotaped confession. And as for the rest of the story from there, let's start with the official Ministry of Truth propaganda. Here comes America's Pravda, the official toilet paper of record. The New York Times has this headline, Biden's win is confirmed, but nation is shaken in mob's aftermath, White House resignations and calls for Trump's removal. Chuckie Schumer, they note, joined growing calls for Mr. Trump's immediate removal by any means necessary from office. Facebook will block President Trump on its platforms until at least the end of his term, said billionaire CEO Mark Zuckerberg. Fuhrer-elect Joe Biden called the storming of the Capitol a, quote, dark moment in U.S. history. And no, folks, I paraphrase that headline. Here's another, in quotes, be there, will be wild. Trump, they say, all but circled the date. And another, how Trump loyalists stormed the U.S. Capitol. Listen to the opinion crap, as if all of that somehow wasn't. In no particular order, impeach and convict right now, says one. Why Trump must be removed and disqualified from public office, says another. Trump has always been a wolf in wolf's clothing, says a third. The pro-Trump movement was always headed here. Trump incites rioters, and I'm not kidding, all of these are right there on the front page. The president is to blame for Capitol attack, and so on ad nauseum. And then there's the official house organ of the deep state, none other than the WAPO, which has this banner headline, After Chaos, Calls for Trump's Removal. Aides weigh resignations, removal options. Congress affirms Biden's win as shaken, angry lawmakers return to Capitol. Almost sounds, folks, like some of them didn't realize it was all going according to plan. And they can't get enough of this one. Schumer calls for Trump to be removed from office, either by 25th Amendment or by second impeachment. The only thing that all the press seems to be completely unanimous about, besides the fact that Joe Biden will finally be coronated, is that everything else wrong with America is unquestionably Donald Trump's fault. And that obviously includes the near nuclear attack on the U.S. Capitol by evil deplorables. But here next, folks, is where the plot really thickens, and this is where you've got to pay close attention and do it rapidly before the press manages to get the official narrative together. The Daily Mail has lots of pictures, photos, and even videos, and it's helpful, at least for now, in understanding what actually happened. The headline is a great tip-off. How on earth, says this one, was Congress siege allowed to happen? Dems demand security lapse probe into the attempted coup, as video shows cops helping rioters, you heard that correctly, and posing for selfies. Gee, folks, almost like it was a well-behaved, friendly crowd. At least up until somebody pulled the pin, and if you understand the term false flag or agent provocateur, you know exactly what we're talking about. And if you were watching live, yeah, you saw what the article talks about here. Officers pulling barricades away and allowing Trump demonstrators in, helping them down steps and even taking selfies. Almost like somebody wanted this to happen. Because in a great big crowd, all it takes is a few embeds, call them CIs, undercover agents, or even Antifa if you prefer, to go instigate things and get what then turns into a mob moving in the direction they want it to. Some tear gas and whacking a few people with nightsticks are really helpful in that regard. I've heard stories from reporters already who said they were drawn into places they didn't intend to go, including the Capitol building proper, but didn't have much choice about it. That story from the Daily Mail begins this way. An Ohio congressman charged with funding the Capitol Police vowed on Wednesday to launch an investigation, oh yeah, that'll help, into how hundreds of President Trump supporters, they don't say it, I will, and no doubt more than a few Antifa, BLM, and other agent provocateurs were able to storm U.S. Capitol buildings and, quote, run riot. Representative Tim Ryan said he believed there were some, quote, tragic mistakes from the very beginning, and that's putting it really mildly, folks, after videos emerged on social media that appeared to show officers taking aside barriers for demonstrators and even taking selfies with them. He promised that Capitol Police would face imminent firings for the, quote, embarrassment. No, folks, it was a setup. that was their response to what he called the attempted coup. Quote, I think it's pretty clear that there's going to be a number of people who are going to be without employment very, very soon, said Ryan, because this is an embarrassment, both on behalf of the mob and the president and the insurrection and the attempted coup, but also the lack of professional planning and dealing with what we knew was going to occur, unquote. Oh, they knew it was going to occur, folks, and trust me, it was planned very, very carefully and, yes, professionally, said the Ohio Democrat. Quote, you can bet your ass that we're going to get to the bottom of it. And I got to say this, somebody better clue this idiot in before he blows it wide open. And here's the punchline of this bit of tripe. The lack of police presence, it says, as thousands of Trump loyalists descended on D.C. Wednesday, has been questioned, as has the response from law enforcement, which has been accused of using more heavy-handed tactics with Black Lives Matter protesters over the summer. Unquote, and what a crock. How many Black Lives Matter protesters got shot point blank in the face? Well, actually the neck. And okay, let's go there next, because you may or may not ever see the really telling videos. At least four, actually taken from different angles as well. The best one is up a number of places, at least for now, and probably will last a bit longer on Brighteon.com, Mike Adams' site, where I saw it. In it, you can very clearly see a man behind a door with his pistol up and drawn, two-handed stance, finger on the trigger, ready to fire. And when the young woman moves into position, he fires point blank, clearly less than 6 feet away, shooting her through the neck. What's revealing is that from other angles you can see clearly at least four armed Capitol Hill police and what looks like one detective or plainclothes agent standing in the very same area within arm's reach of the victim or on the steps leading up to the floor where the shooting took place that did not have their weapons up and were not ready to kill anybody, most of whom then helped move the crowd back and laid her out on the floor as she died. The dead woman turns out to have been 35-year-old Ashley Babbitt, California native, and a 14-year veteran of the Air Force, who served four tours, including in Iran and Afghanistan, and was, says local coverage in San Diego, a high-level security official throughout her time in the service of her country. In their post-death snipe, the WAPO says about her, she used her social media to express fervent support for President Trump and echo many of, quote, the president's conspiracy theories and false claims of mass voter fraud, unquote. They're still shameless. We do, of course, need to talk about what the false flags, masquerading as so-called riots, were intended to disrupt, cover up, and enable to be short-circuited. And that, of course, was precisely what the media doesn't want you to know about. They call them the false claims of mass voter fraud and evidence that now you're not going to see on C-SPAN, much less NPR, MSNBC, or the other criminally negligent networks. So the part of the story we need to talk about next has to do with what happened after Mike the Pence began to read from the Arizona electoral vote certification.
Are there any objections to counting the certificate of vote of the state of Arizona that the teller has verified appears to be regular in form and authentic?
Mr. Vice President, I, Paul Gosar from Arizona.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Arizona rise?
I rise up for myself and 60 of my colleagues to object to the counting of the electoral ballots from Arizona.
Is the objection in writing and signed by a senator?
Yes, it is.
It is.
And that was Senator Ted Cruz, who stood up next to Representative Gosar, along with at least a partial standing ovation from those in the near vicinity. The objection was read, and then was supposed to follow the two-hour separated constitutional debate.
The two houses will withdraw from joint session. Each house will deliberate separately on the pending objection and report its decision back to the joint session. The Senate will now retire to its chamber.
And we now know that other wheels, already set in motion, would soon put a stop not only to that, but any attempt to thwart the juggernaut. For his part, Senate Majority whore Mitch McConnell showed just exactly what a traitor he is, claiming in his Senate speech that, quote, nothing before us proves illegality. He even told the disgusting bald-faced lie that this, quote, election was not unusually close. Well, actually, it wasn't, but that's not what he was trying to claim. And hindsight demonstrates that was the point of what followed. There were a few brief bright spots before the debate was shut down completely by the oh-so-conveniently timely false flag. Representatives Jim Jordan, Andy Biggs, Lauren Boebert of Colorado, and Mike Johnson all made good points about why what was happening shouldn't have been allowed to happen, and what the point of the constitutional check was supposed to be. After the debacle and the delay, however, late that night, when the House and Senate came back into session, properly chastened, of course, and oh so contrite, other Senate objections had almost completely and amazingly melted away.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
These aren't the droids we're looking for. Move along. Move along.
And indeed they did. Not quite at warp speed, but still with all the subtlety of a Third Reich choo-choo train on the tracks to we already know where. Objections to first Georgia, and then the others, died with a whimper, not a bang, as the senators that had once co-signed evaporated like the morning mist. Or actually, like the concept of election integrity and the rule of law. Finally, though, they got around to Pennsylvania, where Missouri Senator Josh Hawley did manage to summon the intestinal fortitude to maintain his objection as the lone senator to sign on to the objection to that bit of electoral abomination. Not as we now know that it ultimately mattered. I want to close today, however, with a few minutes from what, without question, was the best speech that illustrates just how far gone the American Republic is during the entire session. These are some of the comments from Florida's Representative Matt Gaetz, who began by pointing out how, in spite of their differences, Congress can sometimes come together.
Because we care about each other, and we don't want bad things to happen to each other, and our heart hurts when they do. Now, I'm sure there are plenty of folks over there who don't like me too much, and there are a few of you that I don't care for too much, but if anybody had been hurt today, it would have been even more of a catastrophe than we already saw, and I think that's an important point for the country. Another important point for the country is that this morning, President Trump explicitly called for demonstrations and protests to be peaceful. He was far more, you can moan and groan, but he was far more explicit about his calls for peace than some of the BLM and left-wing rioters were this summer when we saw violence sweep across this nation. Now, we came here today to debate, to follow regular order, to offer an objection, to follow a process that is expressly contemplated in our Constitution. And for doing that, we got called a bunch of seditious traitors. Now, not since 1985 has a Republican president been sworn in, absent some Democrat effort, to object to the electors. But when we do it, it is the new violation of all norms. And when those things are said, people get angry. Now, I know there are many countries where political violence may be necessary, but America is not one such country. Madam Speaker, it was wrong when people vandalized and defaced your home. It was wrong when thugs went to Senator Hawley's home. And I don't know if the reports are true, but the Washington Times has just reported some pretty compelling evidence from a facial recognition company showing that some of the people who breached the Capitol today were not Trump supporters. They were masquerading as Trump supporters and, in fact, were members of the violent terrorist group Antifa. Now, we should seek to build America up, not tear her down and destroy her. And I am sure glad that at least for one day, I didn't hear my Democrat colleagues calling to defund the police. Now, I appreciate all the talk of coming together, but let us not pretend that our colleagues on the left have been free of some anti-democratic impulses just because we signed on to legal briefs and asked courts to resolve disputes. There were some on the left who said that we should not even be seated in the body, that we ought to be prosecuted, maybe even jailed.
By the way, folks, those calls have now gone into warp drive. There's a shocker.
Those arguments anger people, but people do understand the concepts of basic fairness. And no competition, contest, or election can be deemed fair if the participants are subject to different rules. Baseball teams that cheat and steal signs should be stripped of their championships. Russian Olympians who cheat and use steroids should be stripped of their medals, and states that do not run clean elections should be stripped of their electors. This fraud was systemic. It was repeated. It was the same system, and I dare say it was effective. We saw circumstances where when Democrat operatives couldn't get the outcomes they wanted in state legislators, when they couldn't get the job done there, they went and pressured and litigated and usurped the Constitution with extra constitutional action of some officials in some states. They fraudulently laundered ballots, votes, voter registration forms, and then they limited review. In 2016, Democrats found out that they couldn't beat Donald Trump at the ballot box with voters who actually show up, so they turned to impeachment and the witness box. And when that failed, they ran to the mailbox, where this election saw an unprecedented amount of votes that could not be authenticated with true ID, with true signature match, and with true confidence for the American people. Our Article III courts have failed by not holding evidentiary hearings to weigh the evidence. We should not join in that failure. We should vindicate the rights of states. We should vindicate the subpoenas in Arizona that have been issued to get a hold of these voting machines, and we should reject these electors.
Instead, folks, now we have to deal with a successful communist revolution.